Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Slate Money Travel. I am Felix Salmon of Axios, and you are...
I'm Craig Maude. Thank you. Hello.
You are Craig Maude. Hello, Craig Maude. You are an international man of mystery, but introduce yourself. Who are you?
Oh, I feel like there's no mystery at all. Everything is out there. It's all out there. It's embarrassingly out there.
You're online, you're in books, you're everywhere that anything can be found.
Exactly.
You're on the trail, you're on the street.
Exactly. Well, you know, I always try to explain myself to people I meet and not have it be complicated. And it's impossible not to have it be complicated. So it all depends on who I'm talking to. So I could be a guy who sometimes writes for the New York Times if I want to, like, you know, place myself in the context of a known thing for someone. But mainly what I do is I write books and I go on long walks. That's kind of the crux of it.
Tell me about the new book.
The new book is called Things Become Other Things. Actually, the structure of the publishing is really unique. I'm doing my own fine art edition. So photos, full color, printed and bound in Japan, super fancy. It's $100 a book. And in the middle of producing my edition, Random House bought the hardcover trade rights. So this book is going to come out in a different form with Random House in spring 2025.
So we'll be talking about walking and Japan and the whole praxis of, like, traveling on foot, which is possibly the original and still the best way of traveling. It's all coming up on Slate Money Travel.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Am I allowed to use the word praxis, or is that just incredibly pretentious?
And, you have to use it. Pretentious. You have to. That's the only way to describe what I do. In fact, no other word. You're not allowed to use any other word. This is a praxis conversation we're going to have.
A praxis conversation.
Yeah.
Which is to say... a lot of walking, and specifically a lot of walking in Japan, or do you walk all over the place?
I mean, Japan is just because I'm here. I've been here for 23 years. I moved here when I was 19, and it's just, this is my home, you know? And so that allows me to engage with it pretty easily, to go on these. And Japan has this rich historical history of walking. So Japan, it's, you know, Japanese people have been walking usually for pilgrimage purposes, which a lot of Europeans used to do as well. You got the Camino in Spain and all that. But Japan has a really rich, historical, anthropologically interesting history of walking. And so I'm kind of engaging with that as well. But I've done walks, big walks in southern China, Spain, England. I just did the Cotswolds last year, and I did the Wainwright coast to coast this past July, which was really intense. It was a lot. And I ate so many Branston pickles and cheese sandwiches. And it really changed my life. I'm importing Branston pickles now into Japan.
Branston pickle is one of the great foodstuffs of the world.
It's so good.
It needs to be paired with a nice sharp cheddar.
Yes.
On a thick cut piece of bread. And it is a magnificent fuel for any kind of walk.
Arguably, it's a perfect walking food. Perfect.
Yeah. You can eat it on the go.
You can be, yeah.
Should you be so inclined.
You can be moving, and it's delicious, and the sharpness of the cheddar and the kind of funky crunch of the Branston pickle. It's all good. It's all delicious.
You said something interesting. You said that it were like the coast to coast walk was pretty intense. Like, I think one of the things that people worry about when they, if insofar as people even think about doing long walks, like multi-day walks, they generally consider and reject it within the space of about 1 minute because they think, oh, it's just going to be too uncomfortable. It's gonna like physically uncomfortable. It's just gonna be too physically hard for me. I don't think I'm physically capable of, even if I'm physically capable of doing the walk bit, the whole like, you know, where am I going to spend the night and am I going to have a nice shower in the morning kind of thing. Like just, they don't, the logistics are too hard, the discomfort is too hard, and then they immediately reject the whole concept.
Sure. I can see that.
Are they right about that?
I mean, to a degree, for sure. You know, like, on the Wayne's right, I mean, we slept in some pubs that were just like, maybe this shouldn't be offering rooms anymore in this place. It's like, what is happening here? I felt like I was having a stroke in some of them. I mean, just the stuff they had up on the walls. I mean, it was bizarre. It was totally surreal. But you just have to lean into that. I mean, that's a big part of travel is you don't know what you're going to get all the time. And sometimes you're going to have a little discomfort. But, you know, it's all outweighed by the incredible people you meet, the nature, if that's what you're into, the nature that you can experience and walk through and the villages and all that stuff and the history. I think if you know what it's about, if you really get it, once you get it, you can overlook all the other stuff. It's pretty easy.
How much advanced planning is involved? Like, did you know exactly which pubs you were going to be staying in before you stayed in them?
Oh, for sure. I'm maniacally rigorous about logistics. I don't want to think about anything on the walk, anything that has to do with a lodge or like, you know, where we're eating or none of that. I just want to be focused completely on the walk and what's around me and who I'm meeting. You know, because a lot of these walks that I do are for books, you know, so I'm like, I'm photographing, I'm interviewing people, and I want to be totally present, like radically present for the walk. And if I'm thinking about where am I going to stay that night, am I going to get there in time, or do they have rooms, or blah, 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 that gets in the way. So when I do my big Japan walks, you know, I've done walks, 40-day walks before, and I'll spend a week. It takes like a week of logistics planning to get all the hotels set. You know, a lot of these inns I'm staying at don't have websites. They only accept reservations by fax, you know, or phone call.
I love that the Japanese it's the last country in the world that is still based on fax.
It's a good technology. Glorious. It's a fine technology. We need to get the pneumatic tubes back and everyone should have a fax machine and the world would be way more interesting. But so like I'll spend a week truly like calling and, you know, one inn will be available on this night, but not on that night, and shifting things around and calling people back. And there's a certain kind of cultural rigor required as well, where you have to be kind of gracious and you're, you know, there's a way to talk and a certain Japanese to use. And I don't mind that part of it, but I don't want to be doing any of it while I'm in the walk. When the walk starts, I just want to be present. So I have spreadsheets. I have these mega spreadsheets of my walks, of like distance, where we're staying, you know, what meals are included, you know, like that. Here's the Google Maps link, blah, blah. It's all in there before I take my first step.
The cost of that presumably is a certain degree of spontaneity. You can't just suddenly go, oh my God, I love this place, I want to stay here another 3 days.
Well, you just come back.
You just come back.
It's like, it's not like this is your only chance in life to ever go to this one time. It's like, you just go back. So like, you know, I collect along the way, you know, cities and villages and stuff that I want to go return to. And then I go back and I'll spend 3 or 4 nights there. And that works as well.
When I think about someone who's famous for like doing walks, the first name that springs into my mind is Richard Long, the English artist.
Sure.
Who would, along with this other guy called Hamish Fulton, who I think was Scottish, would just kind of document walks, often in a very simple way, like this many miles, this many days. And it did strike me when I first encountered these walks, and some of the more sculptural things are fantastic, but one of the things that struck me was that the sheer miles per day part of it was quite macho, that he would do like a lot of miles in one day. What's your like ideal for that?
Yeah, I mean, and having done way too many macho mile days by accident, often by accident because I've like miscalculated or something, or because there's no inns and like I refuse to be assisted by transportation. So I'm like, I have to walk to the next town no matter what. the ideal for me is probably 15 to 20 kilometers a day, I think is, that's long enough where you feel like you're using your body. It also depends on how many days you're talking about. So if you're doing like, if you're doing a week, you can kind of push it. You can do like 30K days and they kind of hurt, but like you can do it. If you're doing a month of walking, I think 15 to 20 is great. Because you never feel like you're going over the edge. Once you're at 25, once you're at 30K, you're kind of ready to get to the inn for the night. You're kind of like ready to be done. But 15 to 20, you can kind of go at a nice pace. You can stop along the way. You can engage with people, which is for me, all the whole point of doing it. You can go do little detours into interesting museums or parks or cafes or restaurants. You can linger for a little bit longer, talk to someone for a little bit longer, be invited into homes, have coffees, whatever. Anything can kind of happen. So that spontaneity is enabled by the slightly shorter day. And so for me, 20K is usually what I aim for on my walks now. And sometimes you hit it and sometimes you don't.
Yeah. How heavy is this pack that you're carrying?
I mean, a lot of the walking I do is hotel to inn to inn, hotel to hotel, mm-hmm. you know, it can be, or sometimes like, you know, local bed and breakfast to local bed and breakfast or whatever. And so when you're doing that, you don't have to carry a tent, you don't have to carry food. Maybe you just carry lunch for the next day, something like that. So it can be really light, you know, that your pack can be, I only know kilograms.
But say kilograms, that's fine.
Basically like, you know, 10 kilograms. And I'm carrying a laptop, a camera, at least one camera, often two cameras. I just did a 6-day walk through Tokyo. I walked from Disneyland, which is right out over the edge of Tokyo City. So of all the prefectures in Japan, Tokyo is the only one that's a to. It's not a prefecture. And so it's the city unit. And Chiba Prefecture is right next to it. And Disneyland is right there. And it's the most man-made thing I could find that was just over the edge of the Tokyo city limit. And so I spent a night in Disneyland, and then the next day I set off and I walked all the way across Tokyo, 6 days, 150 kilometers. And I finished just two nights ago at the top of the highest point in Tokyo, which is the top of this mountain called Kumotori Mountain. And it's 2,012 meters high. So it's pretty high. It's, you know, it's a pretty serious mountain. And it's right there that Yamanashi Prefecture, Saitama Prefecture, and Tokyo all connect at this mountain peak. And so for that one, because, you know, I was staying at inns and I knew I'd have laundry and stuff, you know, your pack can be really simple. I just had two t-shirts, two pairs of undies, two pairs of socks, basically. That was it. Laptop, couple of cameras. And for normal people who aren't doing what I'm doing on my walks, you don't need the cameras and the laptop. So you can have almost like a day pack you can get away with, and then just do laundry, quick laundry every night. And if you're using merino wool t-shirts and underwear and socks, it all dries instantly. You just have to hang it up somewhere in the room and it'll be dry by morning for sure. So all that stuff's pretty easy. Logistically, you don't need much. So when I see people traveling around with these giant suitcases, I'm just like, what are you doing? What's in that suitcase?
We'll have a quick ad break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about boredom and meeting people and conversations.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That fascinates me because I think, again, most of the like the popular conception of long multi-day walks is out in natural scenery. What, like, walking through a city seems weirdly unnatural. Like, why would you need to walk from place to place? Like, if you want to go on a long walk in a city, you can do it, and then you can just hop in an Uber and go back to where you started. So what? Yeah. Tell me about this idea of walking through a city and what makes that interesting.
Well, this is the third formal big Tokyo walk I've done. In the first two, I stayed at one hotel and just kind of like spokes on a wheel. I kind of like went out every day in a different direction and sort of had different themes to the walks and always came back to the hotel at night. But this one, I wanted to feel the gradients of the city because Tokyo-to, which is the city unit, the prefectural unit, is really elongated east to west. If you look at it, it's super long. So it's 150K if you kind of walk from the furthest east point to the furthest west point. And I just wanted to feel the gradients of the city shifting from the eastern kind of, you know, blue collar sort of industrial parts of it into the center of the city, walking around the Imperial Palace, staying at, you know, kind of a central hotel in the university district, going further west out into the suburbs, seeing how the suburbs shifted into farmland. And then finally you end up in this incredibly rich forest mountain area right at the western sort of edge of the city. And to kind of experience that, I think the linearity of it is really critical. Whereas if I was kept taking trains back to the center of the city every night, it probably wouldn't have been as interesting experience. And logistically, when you get that far west, it takes 2 hours to get back to the center of Tokyo. So it wasn't really a sort of logistically possible thing either. That would have been pretty painful.
Which does open up the opportunity for American walks, which are, you know, for reasons of suburbia, just like much less, it's much harder to do the kind of walk that you're talking about in the US, I think. I mean, there are bits of New England where it can be done. But like, yeah, in principle, there's no reason why someone can walk across Los Angeles.
True. Yeah. But America, like the walk I just did in Tokyo, I kind of cobbled together, but a lot of the ones I do are on historical routes. So they're walks that were done historically between Kyoto and Tokyo or around the Kii Peninsula or in other parts of Japan. And so there's kind of a historical infrastructure of supporting walking that you can lean on. And I lead walks with Kevin Kelly. Kevin Kelly, one of the co-founders of Wired, really interesting guy. He just turned 73, I think, this year. He and I lead these walks in different places around the world, and we invite 10 people, artists and scholars and academics and musicians and stuff like that. And we do Jeffersonian walks for a week. So we come up with a theme. Every day there's a theme. Someone proposes a new theme every day. We do the walk, usually, again, 15 to 20 kilometers a day. And then at night we have a Jeffersonian dinner where it's that topic, single topic for the dinner. Only one person's allowed to speak at once. We all have to be present, one single conversation. And those are truly incredible. I mean, really wonderful, wonderful experiences that are built on basically using the walk as a platform. And we've tried to do them in America, and there just isn't the historical walking infrastructure available to do it. Like we've looked and we're like, oh, it'd be great to do one of these in America. America, the walks in America that are famous long walks are obviously Appalachian Trail, Pacific Coast Trail, things like that. Like huge nature walks where you're kind of unsupported, you're carrying all your food, you've got tents, maybe you break off every now and then to go into a town to like restock and then you go back into the woods. Those kinds of walks actually aren't that compelling to me. For me, it's the anthropology of the cities, of the villages. You know, the Tokyo one was a little funky, but normally I'm going from tiny village to tiny village out in the middle of nowhere in the countryside and engaging with whatever industry might be there. So it could be lumber-related stuff. I'm talking to lumberjacks, talking to fishermen, talking to old textile workers. Stuff like that to me is what really feels like the richness, where the richness of the walks come through for me. And then the physicality of it adds another layer of there's just an incredible amount of satisfaction of having walked 20 kilometers in a day and having gone from A to B. It just feels good. I think we're programmed to feel good when we do that. And so it's kind of a high you get from the physical, and then the anthropological and the conversations are like an added layer of richness. So I love that.
Walking does lend itself to conversations. It's one of the ways you can have the most interesting conversations. And especially if it's a long walk, they can be very long. They can be deep. They can, that presumably is a central part of how these things work. Do you normally have an interlocutor on your walks, or are they mostly solo?
I try to do most of my walks solo, simply to have the conversation with myself. It's like, I'm just, so I have these rules with my walks where I'm not allowed to listen to podcasts, not allowed to listen to music. I actually block all social media and all news on my phones and devices when I'm doing these walks, because the point is to be so present that you're so bored and you're kind of getting to these breaking points of boredom, where you find yourself click into another level of attentiveness. And that to me is what's really kind of fun. There's almost like an ascetic component to it, where you're so bored that you're desperate for stimulation. So you're more willing to reach out and talk to people and just give me a story, give me anything. I'm like, normally I'd be scrolling through New York Times or looking at Washington Post or whatever. Like, give me something. And so there's something exciting about that, about forcing yourself to be present. And so I do most of my walks like that. And it's from those walks that my books come and a lot of the other writing and photography I do comes. But the walks I do, like with Kevin Kelly, where we do have these groups, like you say, they are the perfect catalyst for deep conversations. And you by day three or four, you feel so intimately connected with the group and you're doing this thing in tandem together. And you're, you know, by the end, you've walked 100 kilometers, 120 kilometers together, and that feels like an accomplishment. And actually, if you go to the Camino, one of the walks that Kevin and I did was part of the Camino de Santiago. And the thing you realize is you're doing this wild thing. I thought the Camino was going to be a little bit too touristy and maybe not interesting. But the fact of the matter is you are doing this rigorous, kind of nutty physical thing with thousands of other people. And by the time you get to Santiago, you're so high. Like, Santiago is one of the most bizarre, surreal cities I've ever been to, because everyone who's there had just finished this wild mega walk. And so you're all kind of like, the dopamine's popping off and you're all in such a good mood. It was really magical, really wonderful. So I think that's, you know, what a walk does best when you're with others.
After some quick ads, we're going to talk about how you too can become an international walker.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You've like built an existence around these walks, which is amazing. And I love that it's possible to do that. For those of us who haven't, or, you know, for whatever reasons couldn't, what would you recommend for someone who's like, you know what, I can take a week or two off and I want to do a walk somewhere. Like, where would you start? And like, obviously with all travel, the anticipation is part of it. So that whole, you know, logistics thing that you were talking about earlier, about like spending a lot of time really working out where you're going to sleep, where you're going to eat. Do you have any top tips for like where people should go? Presumably you're just going to say Japan, right?
I mean, Japan, England is great. I mean, England is great. England walking culture is incredible. I mean, what I would say is like, look, the walks I'm doing are my own weird walks that no one else does. And so I have to do all the logistics myself. But for most normal, well-established walks in the world, there are many, many companies that will book all the hotels, that will forward your luggage for you, so you don't have to carry anything but a day pack and you don't have to worry about like being minimalist or whatever. And so England, all over England, there are walks that, you know, there are companies that will handle that for you and set it up. If you say you've got 10 days, they'll give you a 10-day walk. If you've got 2 weeks, you'll get a 2-week walk. Ireland, Scotland, Japan, there's a company called Walk Japan that specializes, this is all they do. And they have incredible numbers of people every year coming through. I mean, just bonkers. Like in fact, the infrastructure doesn't exist to support the number of people that want to do these walks. There's just like physically not enough hotel rooms compared to the number of people who want to come and do these walks. So a lot of these routes are booked out years in advance. If you try to walk the Kumano Kodo now during the peak season, which is like spring and fall, it can be really difficult to get a room, you know, a year out. It's kind of shocking. So I would say...
You say now. that now is really... Is this because it has become more popular in recent years?
I think, well, in Japan in general has just gotten more popular. Like 10 years ago, something happened. I moved to Japan in 2000. And I didn't realize it at that time, but I moved to Japan during like the dark ages of tourism. Like Japan had fallen off the map. The economic bubble had burst in the early 90s. And like Japan just disappeared. It wasn't on the radar. And when I think back to how few tourists there were and how easy it was to go and see anything or to go into anywhere, the access was incredible. Compared to now, it's shocking. But if you look at the tourism graphs, they're pretty flat until about 2010, 2011. And then there was this thing that started to happen, kind of a big part of it is the economic redistribution. So like China coming online economically as a nation and being able to travel, being able to do leisure travel and being so close to Japan, Korea becoming more economically strong, Thailand, Vietnam, all these Southeast Asian countries basically just doing better, having more of a middle class, and Japan being this kind of interesting destination that's on their doorstep. You just saw this massive influx begin in the early 2010s. And in 2019, it was sort of hitting this fever pitch. And then COVID came, and then Japan went into total lockdown mode. And we were suddenly back to 2000. And it was kind of shocking. And this is what really made you realize how special Japan had been back then, because it just simplified everything. And so I did a bunch of mega walks, huge walks during COVID, where I put a mask on and just went out, and I'd leave for, you know, 2 months or whatever. And it was, I'd be the only person in an entire hotel, you know, and it was very surreal. But since last year, when they reopened borders, this year has been one of the biggest tourism years in Japan's history. And it's only growing. So the interest is just through the roof, and the weak yen now makes it extremely affordable to come here. If you can come in the next couple of months, you should.
I was just talking to a friend of mine who just got back from Japan, and he was raving about how cheap everything was. And I've never heard anyone just like talk about Japan as like a bargain destination before.
It's always been a bargain. This has been the great secret of Japan. This is why I lived here and stayed here in my 20s, because I was like, wow, I can live in central Tokyo. My rent is $600 a month. And all I had to make was $15,000 a year to cover all of my expenses. And then everything on top of that was for me to work on books that wouldn't make money or art projects that didn't make money. It was just wild. I was looking at my friends in New York and San Francisco and what they had to pay in terms of fixed costs. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to use Tokyo as my kind of like, sort of gestation ground for the art I want to do in the world. But it's always been cheap and it's still pretty cheap. But now with 150 yen to the dollar, it is bizarre. I mean, it's just weird. it's like I check out and I have American credit cards still, you know, because they have better point systems than the Japanese credit cards. And, you know, I see it pops up on my phone in dollars when I, you know, ring something through on the register, and just the real time dissonance between kind of what it feels like to be paying in yen versus what it really is hitting your bank account it's very surreal. And last year when it was 135, you know, this is like 15 months ago, I thought, oh God, it's not going to go any higher than this. And we're at 151 now. So anyway, come soon if you want to reap this.
I'm booking my ticket right now as we speak. And it can be luxury. There really are like glamping versions of this. You can,
sure.
if you want to go out and stay in like really comfy places every night, there are ways to do that. Even in England, I think. Maybe not in England.
It's tricky. I mean, definitely on the Wainwright walk I just did, there was definitely no options for some of these. I mean,
Avoid England. If now is the right time to go to Japan, I can tell you it's the wrong time to go to England. Nothing good is happening in England.
Yeah. Right, I mean, I had an incredible experience. I love England. I love British people. So for me, it was a blast. But yeah, Japan is like, if you can get over here, if you can find a good plane ticket deal, that's the problem, is plane tickets are so expensive now. If you can find a good deal on a plane ticket and, you know, you can get the hotel rooms booked, come and do it. I mean, it's really incredible. And then, and just feel the safety, the lack of violence. There's just no violence. You don't feel any aggression. There's no, even like when people are pretty drunk in England, you know, walking across England,
you definitely
feel a little like a lingering violence, you know, connected with the alcohol and everything. You're kind of like, well, there could be a bar fight here. But you just kind of don't have that. Certainly not on these walks in Japan. There's something nice about feeling that peacefulness.
Craig Mudd, thank you so much for coming on Slate Money. This has been absolutely fantastic. And I am literally booking my ticket to Japan as we speak. I'm so coming. It's so happening.
Well, let's do a walk. Come on out.
Let's do it. Fantastic.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.